Welcome everybody to the Touring for Purpose podcast. My name is Mingo. I am your host here today. We are in sunny, although it's been raining, Southern California. I'm at Bayview Baptist Church with Terry Brooks, senior pastor here. We're talking about myths of a growing church, and I love it because the conversation is coming right out of a well-trusted piece of literature, Rick Warren's memoirs, Purpose Driven Church, written nearly 20 years ago, just as old as the RV that we're recording in. Both were released at the exact same time, and both are giving us a place to collect our thoughts today. Terry is a longtime pastor. Terry, how long have you been pastoring for? Not just Bayview, but I think you said you preached your first message at what age?
I preached my first message on my 8th birthday, actually. July 27th, 1980. Standing in a chair.
I love it.
Shaking like a tree in the wind.
Okay, so Terry, you are no stranger to ministry. That's what that says to me.
Absolutely.
And because of that familiarity with ministry, my assumption is that you've seen a lot of different kinds of ministry. Some good, some bad, some indifferent.
And everywhere in between.
That makes you a trusted voice in this conversation. And what I wanted to do was, this is coming out of Purpose Driven Church, chapter 2. It's Myths of a Growing Church. Rick talks about 8 myths that people assume of a growing church or of a big church. And I just wanted to get into it with you because I think your insight is really valuable here. You're pastoring a growing church currently. It was not as large as it is in its current state. When you came to the church, what was its size? Just for a little bit of context, what was its size, and what are you working around average now?
So when I came to Bayview, the pastor who was here before me, Dr. Timothy Winters, he told me about the glory days of Bayview, and we were in what he described personally as a decline. We had plateaued and declined. And from his words, it was because he had been here nearly 40 years.
Wow.
He was in year 35 when I got here. With all things, after a while, after you get used to the pastor, you become accustomed to things, you know, things start to cool off. And we were probably, it's hard to tell where we were membership-wise because we were heavily populated by college students and military families.
Yeah, this area has a transient by way of military and college.
Absolutely. But on Sundays, we were doing about, because we did keep numbers, so about maybe 700.
Okay.
And now, on a good week, you may see between 1,100 and 1,200 easy.
Wow, so you guys have experienced some significant growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've experienced some great growth, missed some opportunities, taken advantage of some opportunities. But it's all a learning process. It's a growing process. And so it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
What would you say has been one of the biggest challenges that you have not just instantly in a heartbeat solved, but something that you're constantly having to readdress through the growing pains?
Being one bridge that reaches in many different directions.
That's cool.
So I have to be the bridge between generations, between cultures, now between ethnicities.
Yeah.
It's like a turning bridge.
I would say people who have a legacy probably with Bayview and
Absolutely.
Then new members of Bayview, they probably have different expectations.
Absolutely. But Dr. Winters did such a good job preparing the church for transition. Preached it, taught it, mentioned it at every time we appreciated him on an anniversary. He talked about it. And so he prepared the church well. It was such a smooth transition. Mm. We passed the baton. Literally, too. We did it in a service with a baton.
You did a literal baton pass.
Yes, I did my good form, my good ankle leg, yes, and got the baton in my hand, and it's a picture I have in my office.
This is actually a really great piece of information because there are so many churches that are navigating the season of transition, and if they're not experiencing it right now in this moment, it's going to be in the next 10 years.
Right.
And so you are a key holder of some probably great wisdom when it comes to that transition process. We need to have that conversation.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of really great myths that Rick talks about. You know, one of the things that people assume of a big church or of a growing church is that all they care about is numbers. And that, I think that statement was written because it means that there is nothing else that they care about. So they don't care about the health of the people that are there. They don't care about the well-being of the members that have been around for a while. We only care about the number of folks that are coming in every single Sunday. How would you back that myth up? If you were going to bust that myth, if people look at Bayview and they go, you guys are just the big church on the block, how do you as a pastor navigate that shallow statement, if I could call it that?
First of all, you understand where it comes from. And it comes from, in my opinion, those who have what we would call a smaller church, and it's in defense of their church not growing as it should.
Okay.
And so rather than say maybe we need to change what we're doing, because growth is biblical.
Yeah.
I always say if you count money and you don't count people, what you're saying is money is more important than people.
Oh, okay.
And we're always going to count our money.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
So look at what we do. We care, first of all, about people.
Yeah.
We care about people.
Yeah.
My job as a pastor and our job as a church to make sure that everybody in this community lives a better quality of life, whether they ever come through our doors or not.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
Our programming says that. We just started back going back out into the community with the surveys from step one of PD Essentials to ask the community, what kind of church can we become to serve you better?
That's so good. And what a different position that is from just determining what kind of church you're going to be in a vacuum, absent of the people in its community.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's intentional. Everything you do has to be intentional. So we care not just about the community, but about our members. You know, we do things like we give out at least $52,000 in scholarships every year.
Scholarships for what?
College students.
Oh, for college students. Legitimate education college students.
Started by my predecessor. To date, we've done like $1.3 million.
No way.
In scholarships. Yes, absolutely.
How innovative is that? Just to say we care about education and we care about the kids in our community getting one.
Absolutely. And we've evolved it. I started a scholarship called a Second Chance Scholarship for those who may have dealt with the life happens things and they want to go back later on in life to school. So I've actually started a scholarship for those people. We have scholarships for people in all walks of life.
So good. That's a really, I would say, innovative, but also kind of a no-brainer. What a great way to declare to the community, you care about the people that are coming out of it.
Absolutely. That not only says to the student, we care about you, but that takes some of the financial burden off the parents.
Yeah.
We do financial literacy classes because I want people to enjoy life. I want you to know how to handle money, not be afraid to have money, not be afraid to use money for God's glory, not think you have to choose between being broke and supporting ministry.
Come on.
So we do things like that. We just opened our Christian Closet boutique. So that when people need clothing,
you
they
open
can
that.
Come. Yes.
We were talking about that in Las Vegas.
Yes, it's open.
It was like a spark of inspiration.
It's open, so now they can get clothes and their dignity. That's and great. Our Daily Bread Marketplace is come getting on. Ready to open so they can come shop for food and keep their dignity.
Come on.
So we're doing things to let people know these things don't really benefit us as much as they do other people. And you don't have to be a member of Bayview. You don't have to even like me. If you're breathing, it's my job to serve you.
So I want people to take this away. You're not focusing on the people that you've got in your seats already. You're not trying to keep those that are already coming. Your sights are solely set on that which is outside of the church.
Absolutely.
Constantly.
And it's about God. So when you come, I never give you anything that says come back to Bayview. I never give you anything with the service times on it because I'm not serving you to do a tit for tat.
Yeah.
I'm serving you because God says I ought to and I have to if I love him.
You're saying no strings attached. You're
no
doing
strings
a no
attached.
Strings attached ministry.
No strings attached because I'm not looking for them to bless me. I'm looking for God to bless us.
Come on. Dude, you're having church right now in here. Now this sounds It's I'm sorry that it has to be this way, but I feel like this is going to flip the lid on so many leaders because we're constantly thinking tit for tat. We're thinking, what can I do? What can I put out there that will in turn gain or earn me a member?
But that's handcuffs because if I do this for you and you come because of that, the moment I stop, you think I stop caring about you.
Yeah, that's good. And I think Rick said it one time. He said, whatever you do to draw your community in, you will have to keep doing that to keep them. So you have to build it on something that you know constantly you're always going to be about, loving Jesus, loving people.
Absolutely. Rick says, you know, you concentrate on the why, not the what.
Yeah.
And that's where we're shifting our focus to, why we do things. Because if we realize why we do it, the outcome doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I'm doing this to gain members, then if I don't gain members from it and we serve 10,000 people, I'm upset.
Mm.
But if I'm doing it because I love the Lord and I'm supposed to, regardless of the outcome, I'm fulfilling my purpose.
Now, I want people to get you straight, because here's the deal. Oh, welcome guest coming in through the RV, Nick Moultrie, I'm assuming. Yeah, Nick, meet my buddy Terry. Yo. Terry's sitting down. This is a lively show. Terry, this is Nick. Nick's a young, sharp leader, so we're gonna have this conversation together. Nick, you're gonna be listening. If you got something to say, say it. But as a next gen leader, this would be some great input.
Great.
Make sure if you're gonna talk into the microphone.
Absolutely.
Terry, you're like a sports fanatic.
Absolutely.
You've got kids in sports playing on the level, being about to be drafted status. So competition and the results matter, but you're transcending that. I'm not going to call it a temptation, but the reality is you're setting your sights as a pastor serving people. It's all on Jesus, not the results themselves.
Absolutely, because I've seen so many great pastors who are result driven.
Okay.
And at the end of their tenure or their career or even their lives, it seems like a disappointment if the results are not still there, because they're looking at that immediate result. So I intentionally changed my focus to my purpose being here. So now I know I'm serving my purpose through my entire life. And it doesn't matter what the result is in the sanctuary.
Because it's kingdom.
Absolutely.
Kingdom dividends.
Absolutely. When I get to heaven, I'm sure some people will walk up to me and greet me and be in heaven because of something I did that impacted somebody I had no idea about.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm fine with that because I'm not here to be made a king or to make kings either.
Woo! If you've got questions or if there's something that you want to say here on Facebook, we can see your comments right here. I want to say this. The truth is that you're not going to grow a large church if that's all you care about. If
Absolutely.
All you care about is growing a large church, actually, you're going to do the opposite in some senses of ministry that I've been responsible for running. Sometimes I feel like I've poisoned my own well when all I'm trying to do is hustle my leaders and my volunteers to be bigger, to do bigger versions of whatever it is that we've been doing the week before. And I my confession is that I lost focus of the farthest, most, the one thing, which was being obedient to God's leading and keeping my satisfaction laid up in Him instead of looking at the table every single week going, how come we don't have 13? How come we don't have 30? How come we don't have 300? How come we don't have 3,000? I probably imagine there's a lot of leaders who they just wrestle with that. How do you wrestle with that? Is that something that you determine day one? Is it something that you constantly have to go back and remind your flesh to say, okay, I'm not going to get caught up in the results here? Is there a team that helps you keep focused on the right thing? What keeps you on the tracks?
Actually, being connected to guys like you, staying close to Pastor Rick, listening, just making sure my purposes are what they're supposed to be. My focus is where it's supposed to be. And realizing I'm not trying to grow a social club either.
Whoa. Unpack that for me.
It's just like clubs. We've watched in the city, you see one club and it's hot for a while, and then it dies off and another club pops up. Well, churches are like that.
Yeah.
You have churches who are popular for a season, and then they die off and you don't hear anything about them.
A new one pops up a couple blocks away.
And it's packed.
It's all the rage.
With the same people.
This is called transfer growth.
Absolutely. And they go from church to church to church, and it's all about the Sunday morning moment. But nobody does anything between worship services.
Yeah, between that Sunday at 10 to the next Sunday at 10.
Which is why this summer I did the SOS serving outside the sanctuary, shut down on the Sunday to show people that we come here to worship God, but how about we go out and be a sermon for somebody else?
Wow.
So we came,
live
did worship. Absolutely.
Yeah,
we came, did worship, and went to serve. And people were asking, why are you here? And that's the question I wanted to hear.
That's exactly what you want people to ask.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They were shocked that on the Sunday, when we're usually in the sanctuary, that we were out with them. And we had to let them know, this is our purpose. This is what it's all about. And that's how you change it. You have to do something that bucks the system. You can't let people just come and sit.
Yeah.
You can't just let people come and sit.
you have to, as a leader, you have to entertain two groups of people, not entertain them. You have to lead them constantly. You have to lead those that are coming to belong to your church. And in that group is the people that are checking your church out. They're checking Bayview out. They're checking Terry Brooks out. But then you've got your leadership core. And tell me about the wrestling match of helping your volunteers stay focused on the right purpose. Because I feel like a lot of times there can be disappointments when they try something, they bring something to the table as an effort. How do you keep them focused on the right thing so they're not measuring the wrong thing?
First of all, we make sure we're doing things that give us easy wins.
Okay.
It's, you talked about sports. It's like football. In football, you don't try to win a game every down. You try to get a first down. You don't try to score a touchdown every down. You try to get a first down.
That's really good.
You get enough first downs, you get a touchdown.
Yep.
You get enough touchdowns, yeah.
you win the game.
So it's the same thing with church. You don't go for the touchdown every single time. It's not Tecmo Bowl. Yeah. You can't score every play. You don't have Bo Jackson to run over everybody every play. And then we realize we don't want to be like most health clubs. Mm-hmm. Most health clubs are not starving for members. They have memberships. It's just those with the memberships don't show up. Mm-hmm. And when they show up, they want to act like they've never gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then you have most people in church who act like the trainers in health clubs who sit in their offices until you come see them. Mm. It has to be the opposite. We want people to belong to Jesus, not just belong to the church.
Come on.
Because if you belong to Jesus, when the church needs you, you answer.
Yeah.
Versus like I have a membership at the health club and I go every first 3 weeks of the year and then I'm over it to the next 3 weeks.
New Year's resolution.
Right. And I'm still paying money.
What are those?
And so you keep people's passion ignited. We do things. We keep fellowship going. We do fun things. We try to keep people. And I care about people. Like I don't do holiday services. I don't do a Christmas Day service. I don't do a Thanksgiving service because I tell people all the time, there's more to life than church, but it's not more to life than God. And you can glorify God spending time with your family and strengthening your family more than you can fracturing your family sitting in the sanctuary every day.
Yeah. It's not going to gain you anything by being inside the walls every single day.
Because if you're miserable at home, you won't live for Jesus in the marketplace because that'll be your resting place.
Come on.
And so you have to do things that show people you care about their entire life.
Yeah. You are beckoning people to God through the church. It's not that you're trying to get people to the church solely thinking that that's the only place they're going to be able to hear of a person named Jesus. It's like the church is a broker in between this relationship of the people and their maker.
Absolutely.
I want to say that's a perspective that not everybody has. That perspective is very freeing for me. If I'm working for you and I believe that my job is to make sure that people feel loved on behalf of the church, not so they can come to the church, but so they trust Jesus more. Man, you're releasing so much, so much. I wish and I pray, I hope that people listen to this conversation and get an idea of how that can challenge and transform their own paradigm of how they're leading their church.
I didn't think like this 4 years ago.
Okay, so this is something that you can learn.
Absolutely. I was traditional church, but then I had to ask myself this, and this probably won't be a popular position among African-American churches especially.
Okay.
But I believe
Why can you look at Nick? You didn't look at me, bro.
He's a little closer. I'm saying. You're almost there.
I'm close.
You. Almost you persuaded me.
Good job, bro. That's all right.
But, you know, I believe our community is in a fractured state because of the lack of healthy churches in our community. Absolutely. And, you know, we're fractured. I was just looking at, and this is not me being political, but just using it as an example.
Of course.
There were so many women that were together marching all over the world today.
I saw
all over the world.
We had a bunch of friends marching.
We had a bunch of members, a bunch of friends. But my thing is, somebody asked me, well, why don't the men do that? Because the men would be too busy arguing about who's going to be the leader.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Because we have so many people that want to lead even though they have no followers.
Wow. Sure. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, social media is not helping
at all.
That cause.
At all.
Nothing.
Yeah.
At all. And so, you know, we have to come to a place where the purpose becomes bigger than the personalities.
Wow. Come on.
Yeah.
And the beauty about the purpose is this is back to the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. This doesn't back into some church, not Saddleback, it's not Rick Warren. It's what are the action words inside of the Great Commission and the Great Commandment? And when you're balancing those purposes, it releases a personality from having to be the anchor for a church or a movement.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm going against the grain trying to undo that.
Yeah.
I just want to be, Terry. That's who I want to be.
Right. You want to be given permission to be you.
Right.
Right.
Right. I don't want to have to hide behind a title. I don't like titles. I never introduce myself, pastor, anything, reverend, anything. I'm just T.
I go for bishop. I like bishop.
Yeah, it fits you. It fits you.
Reverend.
It fits reverend.
But that, you're saying specific to the African-American church, this is something that could propel a lot of churches forward if they could learn to rearrange the core values, the principles, really, to adopt the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. And I've heard it said that church that's committed to the Great Commission and the Great Commandment will become a great church.
Absolutely.
They keep that thing the thing.
And it's not a knock. I just believe we're drawn to hierarchy.
Yeah.
We're drawn to this position. Convention. We're drawn to that convention because we want this title and that position. And we end up being reservoirs instead of rivers.
You you made a statement earlier about churches, that hot church that pops up like a club and then everybody makes their way over to it. Even if they, bought a lifetime membership at this club, they make their way over to the new one because that's the new hotness and they see all their friends going to it. That speaks to another one of the myths that Rick brings up in this section of the book. He talks about how larger or growing churches grow at the expense of smaller churches. What you're saying is there's a flaw in that migration system where it's from one Sunday gathering off to the next church's Sunday gathering, off to the next church's Sunday gathering.
Absolutely, because you hear people say things like this, and this is, again, not being judgmental, but you hear people say, well, I'm a member here, but I attend there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Mm. So how does that work? That's like saying I bank here, but my money is in that bank.
Yeah.
That's called a robbery.
Yeah, come on.
And we end up robbing our local churches because you have no commitment anywhere.
Yeah, and this has this transcends finances.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so we have to start making those commitments. So we don't grow at the expense of smaller churches. We're not trying to empty smaller churches. For instance, your practice has to line up with the principal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going back and doing our surveys. Well, the day we chose to do our surveys, or the day I chose for people to do our surveys, was on Sunday mornings. So we have 7, 9, 11,
mm-hmm.
and we try to send people out. We're starting to send people out at 11 o'clock. And they ask, why wouldn't we go out on another day? Because those who are at home on Sunday at 11, that's who we want to reach out to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you want those folks that are at home on that
Absolutely.
Time slot to give you the most input on how you can serve them.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. because you're at home on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out what we can do as a church to serve you or to change your perspective about church so that you'll go to one, not ours.
Yeah, yeah, you just want them plugged in, period.
Right. Listen, if I can get everybody in our community in a church, my community gets better. I don't care whose church it is. I can't fit everybody in the community in Bayview.
Yep.
But if they're in a church, we're good.
Yeah.
I was reading and it was this conversation about quality versus quantity and how oftentimes we think we have to choose one or the other. And the reality is that, if you put the context into fishing, you ask yourself, which one do you want? Do you want quality or do you want quantity? And if I'm fishing, I want both.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. If I'm catching waves and I ask myself, do I want a quality wave or do I want a large number of waves? I want both. So we shouldn't have to give one up for the other. The beauty in the rhythm is that if you start chasing quality, which is not the myth, if you focus on a quality relationship with your community, a quality of your leadership development, a quality of your preaching, right? Preaching in a way that would change lives, that quality will draw people. If there's life change that's happening, somebody's going to go tell somebody about the change that happened in your environment. That's going to bring people. That's going to allow your quality to improve if you don't let the focus become muddled. That's
Absolutely.
The number one deal.
And it's also a change in perspective. You have to be able to accept and intentionally not put yourself as the big ticket.
Okay, good.
You can't That's be good. The headliner.
You good. Can't be the headliner.
Absolutely. Yes. It yeah. has to be something else that draws people to Bayview. That's why service is so important. That's why community engagement and civic engagement is so important. Us being a voice for those who are voiceless, that has to be important. And also, the mindset of wanting to create more leaders and not more followers.
Come on, yeah. let's unpack that one.
Because I just create a church full of followers, how many people can I touch in a week? That means people go untouched.
Yeah.
But if I create more leaders, we can touch more people.
As many people as you've got leaders willing to do.
Which means we're empowering more people, and people want to go where they feel that they are appreciated, not tolerated.
Yeah.
So don't just receive me because you have an empty seat.
Yeah.
Receive me because there's a place for me to do what you are modeling.
Yeah, you see potential in me.
Absolutely.
Help draw that potential to the surface.
I'm to be the model, and they are to be the mirrors.
What?
Yeah.
But if you only have one mirror, you know, it's just you and the chosen frozen.
And how long is the line if you've just got one mirror?
And who's going to stand in the line that long?
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not standing in line overnight for Jordans, an iPhone, to sing in the choir, to usher, none of that.
Dude, I love your perspective so much. I have to believe that there are young leaders out there that need to be connected to that kind of train of thought. I mean, who was it where did the aha moment come from?
Several places. Listening to Pastor Rick, the Global Leadership Summit with Bill Hybels.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Henry Cloud, Dr. Mm-hmm. Henry Cloud is amazing and says like the most matter of fact kind of things that blow my mind. I have a brother who's pastoring in Houston, Pastor Keon Henderson at the Lighthouse. We talk and bounce ideas off of each other so often. And there's so many other young pastors doing so many great things. Just watching and listening and learning. Our conversations are just sharing, and it just happens.
Yeah. What is giving you hope when you look at the mass landscape of emerging leaders?
It's because, again, the perspective is changing. Let's use, again, sports.
Yeah.
Rick shared his playbook with us.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm developing my own playbook based on what he's shown me.
Yeah, you get to, like, add your notes in the margins and run your own versions of the plays.
And I want to share that with as many leaders as possible, because if we're running the same offense, if you're playing against a different defense, I begin to see the flaws in our offense.
That's good.
So when you're doing things and you're learning, you know, learning lessons, I'm learning those lessons and I'm making it better.
Collective learning.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we're running the same playbook and I made a mistake over here, I can say, Mingo, hey, I made a mistake when I did this. That way you don't have to make it.
Yeah.
But that's never known if I'm the only one that has the playbook.
Totally. And if you're not connecting to the other coaches.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to share it with as many people as possible. That way we perfect it, if I can use the term perfect it.
Yeah.
But that means we become more effective.
Yeah.
And so I understand things going on. And that's how it has to be. I don't care how many people come to the church across the street. There are enough unsaved people in San Diego to overflow every church.
You don't need to be fighting for any particular
Not
group.
Not at all.
Not at all. I love that, man. Tell me this. I'm connected to a spectrum of churches, some just getting started, some trying to deal with the legacy, the baton pass. What do you tell the pastor that's sitting at that 200 mark, that 400 mark, about, like, they may be experiencing plateau. They might be just like, man, we're just getting started. What do you tell that person as a seasoned pastor? You've got some experience under your belt. What do you tell that pastor to focus on?
Don't pastor the church you see in your dreams. Pastor the church you have until they become the church of your dreams.
Dude, I'm telling you, you're dropping so much. You're dropping so many dimes on the ground right now, bro. I'm about to go to the bank with all this stuff that you're dropping. This sounds like a conviction because I'm guessing you lived this. Tell me, unpack it.
Lived it because I was always trying to pastor the church I knew God was going to give me before he gave it to me.
Yeah.
And so I learned to lead the people that I have. I learned to lead them where they were. Mm-hmm. And then we start making ground. Mm-hmm. But when you start trying to treat a Chrysler 300 like a Bentley because it looks like one, you don't get the same performance.
Come on.
And then you're disappointed. You're disappointed. I don't care what you do to it, it's still a 300.
So
Chrysler.
Good.
That's what Thistle said.
That leather doesn't smell the same.
The floor is hard. You know, the engine won't do the same things, you know. And so you have to learn to pastor the church you have where they are until they become the church. You have to find out what the bridge is. How do I get them from where they are to where God said we're going to be?
That's good. Mm-hmm.
And if you never find out how to get them there, I fumble, not them.
Yes.
And you're asking people to do more. I equip them, we move a little bit. I equip them, we move a little bit. The one thing that happens in a football game, it'll happen all day tomorrow. After every play, there's a huddle. And a call comes from up top.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make the calls.
Yeah.
If I just give them one play,
over and over and over again,
it's not going to work.
It's guaranteed mm-hmm. loss.
And so that's how churches get stagnant. Mm-hmm. That's how churches spin their wheels. That's how pastors mm-hmm. get burnt out.
They play the same play.
That's how people get burnt out. Yeah. I know, I understand it went for a big game, but you can't come back and do the same thing in the next play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Your victories yesterday are not going to win your battles today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different enemy.
Different yeah. enemy. Yeah. Different scenario.
Yes, very different.
Terry, I love it. Tell me this, as we wrap up our conversation, if people want to follow you, if they want to get wisdom from you, other than coming and knocking on your door here at Bayview, how do they keep up with you and Bayview?
I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I think it's Terry Wayne Brooks on okay. Facebook, T. Wayne Brooks on Twitter. And one of those two on Instagram. I just got the app, so
yeah.
I just got the Facebook app today.
Okay.
Did you pray for me when you saw that?
Yeah, yeah.
So embarrassing.
Oh my gosh, guys! I hope that like out of this conversation, you were propelled forward. Thank you for opening up your playbook. Thanks for opening up your social network when you drove me into Vegas. Terry's the man in Las Vegas. If you're going to Las Vegas, you got to go with Terry.
Okay.
Thank you so much. This is the Touring for Purpose podcast. We appreciate you guys. Remember to like, subscribe, and share, comment. That helps us reach way more people than we ever could do on our own. We'll talk to you guys soon.